Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 41 of Season 12 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 film, The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me this week is Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth. Welcome back once again for yet another season, Heather.
I'm so happy to be here, and I'm happy that this time I wasn't bawling my eyes out like I was for Band of Brothers.
Okay.
Less tears.
You get other types of stuff to talk about this week.
Yes. Oh yeah, I got the special scenes.
But that's okay. That's why we have you on for these, you know, because you and I can discuss these things as adults, you know, which makes sense.
It does, because we're grown-ups.
Yes, that is correct. Most of the time.
Most of the time. Only when I come on your show, Rob.
Oh, that's not good.
I try. I do rein in my cursing for you, and I am on reasonably good behavior here. I don't get in too much trouble.
That's right. That's true. Yeah. You're always welcome back, so therefore you haven't done anything really bad.
No.
Because otherwise you wouldn't be invited back. There you go. Okay, makes sense. All right, so Heather, why don't you start off by telling me and everyone your background with The Shawshank Redemption?
I think I was a little late to the game on this one. It was several years after, I think I watched it, but I didn't watch the whole thing the first time I saw it. And it was with, as per the timeline, it was watching it with my parents, but I don't remember it like really resonating with me at the time. I remember thinking this was a good movie and I love Morgan Freeman, but I never like circled back to it and thought this is one of the greatest movies I've ever seen. And I find that interesting, particularly because my experience has been men, it's either this or Braveheart. That is like the common denominator across men, at least in the United States, that I have interacted with over the years, will say is their favorite film of all time. And
really?
Not just...
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say like cinephiles.
I can understand this would be their favorite film, but I wouldn't put Brave... I mean, I'm a big fan of Braveheart, but I wouldn't necessarily put it that high up on the list.
I've always felt the same way. So when I started to kind of get that... When I started working at Blockbuster when I was 19 and in college, this was the movie that I would always ask customers, what's your favorite movie? And I kept getting over and over again that this was so many people's favorite movie. And I thought, well, I need to rewatch it and give it a go. Also, I was 13 when I saw it the first time. I'm a mature 13, but I was still 13 or 14. So I watched it again and I was blown away. I think I really got to appreciate the relationship, the nuance. I think I watched it in Green Mile back to back, actually, which is,
oh wow,
yeah, that's okay, an undertaking. That's heavy. It's heavy, but it's also like that. What I think I love most about it is it's like there is this sense of darkness and hopelessness and how bad the world is, and both movies leave you with a sense of feeling hopeful that there always is a way out. I think that's what I like most about this movie is. Yeah, we watch the entire film and see everything that Andy has to go through and suffer through. But at the end, you know, there's a payoff for it. There's something about it that feels really, really good when you turn it off. You've been on like an emotional journey. And since then, I've watched it many, many times over the years. But it was actually my second viewing that it really, really got me. And I was able to fully appreciate it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Very cool. So you see, this is a question I usually ask my guests later in the week, but I'm actually going to ask it now because it seems like it's an appropriate time to ask. Who do you think the main character is here?
Oh, it the easy answer is Andy, right? But maybe it's not because our dear narrator, Red, really it's from his point of view. And I was really thinking about that, especially because later in the week we're going to have questions about films that have narrators. And I was just having a discussion about books with unreliable narrators, where like how much of this truth story is true, or is this really just from their perspective? Because it is influenced by point of view. Yeah, it's And but it is, it's Andy's story, but it's from his point of view. So I don't know. A little bit of both, maybe. What do you think?
Well, I've already stated my opinion numerous times, but I will say it once again so that you can hear it too.
Thank you.
I believe that Red is the main character
Yeah. I hadn't
here.
thought about it to
Because
ask it. It's a great question.
Red is telling his story, and part of his story is Andy. That's what it comes down to. He's because the arc of the redemption here, in my opinion, is Red. It's not Andy, because Red is talking about, how do I get out of, how do I get out of the, I guess, loop of feeling like, I'm an institutional man.
Yeah. And
And
Andy's
at
the
the
one
end
who
of the
gave him that
movie,
perspective. Yeah.
that's right. And at the end of the movie, he's the one who has a redemption, in my opinion. Again, obviously Andy has a redemption also, but Andy's redemption, it's Andy's redemption we're being told about. It's not something that's happening.
Yeah.
And Red is learning about his own life and his own perspectives on things by reflecting on the story of Andy.
I think that's real. I think I agree with you. You've definitely sold me more to that side. And I think about it too from a storytelling perspective. Like we, a lot of times, particularly with TV shows or even a movie series or anthologies, there's a why are we entering the story at this point, and why and how do we end the story? And it's the same thing in movies often too, but I think it's particularly more noticeable when you have someone who's narrating the story. Why have we entered the story at this time, and why have we ended it at this time? And you're right, it's Red. It's how Andy changed his perspective and his experience on life, and like you said, gave him the idea that he doesn't have to be this way, and there are other choices. That's really good.
Well,
Ah,
that's why
I
we
love it.
do this way,
I know, it's so
that's
great.
why we watch movies, in depth like that, so we can discuss these type of things. So yeah, okay, very cool. I guess I can be happy that I got you to change your mind.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't sold one way or another. I hadn't really thought about it before, but you're right. Because it is like Andy does feel that way because we're watching him, but it really is Red's story. I
Right,
like it.
and
I
we
like it a lot. And
rarely
that's not always the case with the narrator either. It's not always.
right. I mean,
But in
and
this case,
most of the
yeah.
movie is from Red's perspective, not necessarily Andy's
Yeah.
perspective. There are scenes that are Andy's perspective for sure. The music scene. Obviously, later this week we're going to talk about some of Andy's perspective on things. But you can still always look at those scenes as being something that Red was told and Red is telling us, even though we don't
Yeah.
hear the narration.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah,
so
that's good. I like it.
Thank you. So minute 41 begins with Red confessing and ends with Andy beginning his ABCs. So we left things off on Friday with Andy and Red having a conversation over chess, I guess you can say, sort of, where Red wanted to know from Andy why he killed his wife, and it basically Andy asks the question back to Red. What did you do to get in here? Are you innocent also? And no, he said, what did you do to get in here? And Red begins this minute by saying, same as you, meaning he also murdered somebody. Now, have you ever read the book, the novella?
No,
Okay, so
I haven't.
in the novella, they explain what Red did. He basically wanted to kill his wife for an inheritance, and he fixed the brakes on the car, and she ended up giving a ride to the neighbor and her son, and in the end, all three of them were killed, and Red was caught and sent to Shawshank. Okay, so he actually did commit murder. Right.
Yeah.
And Andy looks at him and goes, "Innocent?" And first of all, I love the look on Andy's face when he asks that question because it's a very sincere question.
Yeah.
Andy believes that there is a possibility that Red is also there, that's being he's also being falsely imprisoned.
Well, it makes sense, right? He has been. So, and he's a facts guy. He's a numbers guy. He's a statistics guy. So he's not going to think that he could go, initially, he's not going to think he's going to go to jail for something he didn't do. But he does. So then he does, and that opens up a door for him that he otherwise may not have considered before, which I think is fair for a lot of people to think about people that are in some form of incarceration right now. I think most people would jump to the conclusion that, yeah, they're guilty. But we find out all the time that people go to jail and serve prison sentences for things that they didn't do. It happens all the time. So, but I think he was probably one of those people that would have immediately assumed guilt before innocence in a scenario like this. But now that he has been a victim of the system not working for him, he's enlightened in this way. And also Red has been, I mean, he's a charming, likable guy too. He doesn't seem like somebody you'd look at and go, that guy's a murderer, right? You don't get those vibes from him. There are plenty of other characters in the story that do, and we would be like, yeah, they're absolutely, culpable, they could do something like that. But also, prison changes people. So yeah, I think it's very, very naive and sweet. And I, yes, yeah, sincere, I think you said, when he asks him. And I think there's a little bit of hope because he wants him
That's right.
to
He
be
wants him to
innocent.
also be innocent.
He,
Correct. Correct. And I
yes.
think that a part of the idea also is they want the audience to think that he's innocent also. Because at this point,
Yes.
when you're watching the movie, you don't really know if Andy is innocent or not. You know that Andy says he's innocent, but there's no proof of it when you're first watching this movie. And it's something that I've discussed numerous times. While we watch this movie, we forget about the fact that these are hardened criminals. This is a prison for murderers, rapists, whatever. We see the sisters, and okay, those are people that we say, okay, I can believe that those are the people that actually did the crimes, apparently, whatever that crime is that they're being accused of. But when you look at the at Red's posse, the guys that are around him, none of them really give off the vibe that these guys are hardened criminals. Just look at Haywood.
No.
Later on, look at Tommy. Look at Brooks, Skeet, Jigger, Floyd, Snooze, Ernie. All these guys. None of them look as if there are a lot of movies which show things going on in prisons, and you see all these guys that look like they're guilty. But none of these guys look guilty.
No, and I think great. And I think this is movie is probably one of the best examples of, nuance and character exploration is how we do carry these preconceived notions and we do have biases based on certain things. And the scene and when Red does reveal, yes, I'm not a good guy either. It's kind of crazy, but does that stop us as viewers from liking him? No.
No,
No, it doesn't. It doesn't at all. It's
that's
kind
right.
of crazy, right? Because at the end of the day, he's still a person.
Okay, but
And whereas,
who do we hate in this movie besides the sisters? We hate the warden. We hate the guards.
yeah.
That's part of the perspective here. This story switches things around. We think of all of the hardened criminals as the quote unquote good guys of this movie, and the bad guys are the establishment.
Yes. Well, and I'm trying to think too, and I don't know if you have any to add to, which I would really love if you do, but I am trying to think of another film specifically. I mean, there's a couple, like Cool Hand Luke, where you do see that the criminals and the bad guys in prison are maybe just regular guys, and and they're not such bad people, and the establishment is the bad. But I don't think we see it a lot.
No.
I don't think we
see. No, we don't.
See it a lot, and certainly not until this movie. And I think we've seen it a lot more since this movie. But it was certainly a way of humanizing everyone. And also, you know, that situation, like, I think a perfect example, but also definitely not for everybody, a show to watch if you really want to see how prison or incarceration can change a person or reveal who people really are underneath everything is Oz. Wow.
Yeah.
I watched that for the first time. Like, I was late to the to the show with that one, too. I think I watched that like 7 or 8 years ago. But and while it is like very, very intense, I think the concept makes sense. And I think that's kind of what they do here, too, is they explore, you know, how people evolve in this situation, because humans weren't meant to be in cells and chained and put in places like this. Even if we've done horrible things, even if, you know, you've committed murder, our minds and our bodies were not meant to be imprisoned. And so everyone reacts differently in those scenarios.
Right.
But I love that, that, yeah, they're like, yeah, we've done bad things too, but that doesn't mean we're like bad people across the board. Life is more complex and nuanced than that.
True. True. And Red just looks at him and in a very honest moment, just looks at him and goes, only guilty man in Shawshank. You know, and, you know, we feel for him, as you said, when he says this, you know, we know that it's not necessarily an easy thing for him to admit here either.
No, he doesn't want to. He sees the way Andy's looking at him. He wants to give him the answer he wants to hear. But I think we also, certainly myself, gain a bit of respect for Red for being honest instead
right.
of lying to him or selling him a story that he wants to hear. So he can be on his side. No,
sure.
he tells him the truth.
Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, does Red at this point believe the fact that Andy is innocent? I would argue to say that no, he still thinks that Andy is, you know, completely lying to him like everyone else.
I think it could go either way. I think that maybe he has a question mark above his head. Like maybe, but he does say, and his response to him is every man here. Obviously, we've all done it. And he doesn't say everyone but you, buddy. He says everyone collectively. So I'm inclined to think that he does think that Andy is also guilty,
right.
Whether Andy is lying to himself. And this is the thing that we do as people too. Maybe he thinks Andy's lying. And Red's been there for a while. So he's seen all kinds of people come in and either are lying to them, but people also lie to themselves.
Correct.
And who knows, Andy could be full of crap. He doesn't seem to be, but I think, I do think that there's a question mark. I think that he wonders maybe mm-hmm. this is true, because at some point he has to believe, and you have to believe that everyone is there, deserves to be there. Or I think it becomes a lot harder too.
Right. That's right. And did you notice Andy's response to the fact that Red says only guilty man in Shawshank? We get a few seconds of Tim Robbins, you know, looking at him, and he shakes his head up and down a little bit, meaning he's more or less saying, I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't judge him right away.
That's
because
right.
He's gotten to know him.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
There's a lot more, because he sees him as a person, not what he's done.
Well, more than as a person.
It's so complicated.
He sees him as a friend at this point also.
Yeah. Yeah, friend and an ally. Yeah, right. somebody that does have a conscience, somebody that does seem to care, and somebody that isn't, you know, didn't turn into a monster because they were locked in chains.
Correct. That's right. And then the shot changes, and we see Andy more or less, you know, shaping a rock and, you know, creating what looks like a chess piece, because he said he wants to get chess pieces. So this could be a knight, very possible. The way it looks a little bit.
Yes,
and
it looks like it.
That's right.
It's a horsey.
That's right.
Yeah, it looks like a horsey.
That's right. And he blows a little on it to get some of the the dust off of it. And I love how they give us this few second scene, but the idea that of what they're doing here is they're showing us Andy's meticulous nature,
Yes.
which is something that will continue with him throughout the course of the movie. You know, that because he's so meticulous, that's why he's so good at his job. You know, he's good as a banker and he's good in whatever he's doing because he takes his time to do things in the right way. I
It's
really like the way that
patience,
they do that. Yeah.
discipline. Yeah. Because that's the thing. You can sit there and say he's a banker. You can sit there and say, oh, he's meticulous and he has attention to detail. This is a beautiful example of showing rather than telling.
Yes.
Showing that he is more than patient, that he is disciplined and, like you said, meticulous. He's willing to take the time to create this piece to be just so as it needs to be, which really is also doing double work. Not only are we learning about Andy and who he is, but it's also foreshadowing
That's right.
what he eventually does.
Correct.
It's really brilliant.
Correct. And the scene has amazing music. It's a slower version of the theme of the movie, but it's still done really well. You know, and they give us an idea of what Andy or someone like Andy would do in a prison cell at night when there's nothing to do.
Yeah.
You know, and then the shot changes and we see on the wall someone has scribbled the name Peter on the wall. Now, you probably wouldn't think of any significance for this because you haven't read the book. But in the book, the person on the outside that helps Andy is a friend of his named Peter Stevens.
Oh.
And in the movie, he's called Randall Stevens, and he's a fake person. You know,
Okay.
obviously, in a few months, we'll talk about that more in detail. But I just love the idea that this is the name they're showing us. They're showing us the name Peter, which
Fully intentional. A call, it had to be an intentional callback to the
it
book then.
definitely is an intentional callback to the book. And then the camera pans over to the right.
B-b-Benny and the Jets. Sorry, I can't see Benny without
That's
singing
right.
that.
That's okay. And we see then the name Benny. Now, Benny, unfortunately, is not a name that's in the book. So it's a little harder to try to figure out where the Benny is coming from, but that could just be a Frank Darabont thing. You know,
100%.
maybe that's the name of one of his kids or I don't know, his favorite author.
Or Spielberg, like it's a dog. Yeah.
That's true
My
also.
dog's name is Benny.
That's right.
I had a chocolate lab named Benny. He
There
was
you go.
wonderful.
See,
Yeah.
they did it for you, Heather. They
They
knew.
did. And just so I could sing that in my head because it makes me happy.
That's right. There you go. It's always good making Heather happy. Always a good
Is.
And then Andy, you know, we see that it's completely dark in the prison, and Andy gets up from his bed, and he starts walking over to the bars. And you can see behind him, it looks like there are shelves that have possibly books or things like that there. And he looks out and, you know, maybe he's trying to make sure that nobody's paying any attention, everyone's asleep, there are no guards around, something like that. Again, he's bored. You know,
Yeah.
nothing that he wants to do. And he takes the rock hammer and decides to start scraping on the wall. And you see that he's beginning to create an A. And it's also a very clever way for them to show this because later on we will see what actually happens in this scene. But they give us a scene and it feels as if they've given us a scene to the very end.
Yeah, well, again, I think it's doing double work, which is brilliant. I think part of it too, like why are we seeing these? It gives Andy a reason to go to the wall and start scraping on it. But I think also, what is the relevance of it in this moment? I mean, that's one of the things about prison. Your identity is and your individuality is erased. Everybody wears the same thing. You follow the rules. You march in line. There is no individuality. You have a number on your back. You don't have a name necessarily. And up to this point, I don't think Andy really accepted that he was there and he was going to be there. And whoever Peter and Benny are, that was their way of saying, I was a person and I was here maybe. And he is finally, I think part of it is acceptance that he's stuck there and he's not going to be able to get out by a legal way out. I don't think that he believes that there's a legal way out for him. I think he's lost his trust with the system and he understands that this may be his future. Does he have other plans at this point? Is he scheming? Who knows? But I think this is also a moment where he accepts where he is. But yes, on top of that, I think it's clearly foreshadowing. It's doing the double work of, oh, we're going to remember that wall that he so easily chiseled with that.
Right.
It's just so much. It's so good.
Well, again, that's one of the great ways that they do this. No,
masterclass.
That's right. I think Darabont is an amazing director because of the way that he's
doing
these type of things.
It's a masterclass in storytelling and character development at the same time.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, it's Chekhov's written in clay.
Yes.
Like I wouldn't even know what else to call it. So, all right, and that's how this particular minute ends. So, is there anything else you wanted to mention about this minute?
I was really, really happy to get this one, and I just couldn't believe that. I know we see that sometimes we get a minute, and there's like really not a lot that happens in it, but this one I felt like there was so much going on from literally minute one until we faded out at the end. And I was like, no!
That's right. Okay, cool. All right, so today's segment is called Main Man Monday, where my guests will give their top five Stephen King adaptations. So Heather, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
This was really, 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 really hard. So I picked my favorites. But I have to give two honorable mentions. I have to Cat's Eye and Creepshow because that is how I was introduced to the Stephen King universe.
Okay.
I still love Cat's Eye. It still gives me nightmares. The little troll in the wall.
Yeah.
Forever. Ruined my childhood, everyone. Okay. So number five still is my favorite werewolf movie, Silver Bullet. Love it. It's so scary. That movie scared my pants off as a kid. Even as a kid, I didn't get scared by like horror scary movies. I just didn't. I wasn't allowed to see slasher movies. That was the only thing I wasn't allowed to see. Gen X. We were raised on things that we shouldn't have been watching at a young
100%.
Age. But Silver Bullet scared me. Yeah. But Silver Bullet, I loved it. And I watched it again a couple years ago. And I still think it's fantastic. So if you haven't, watch that.
Now you got me rewatching.
You should.
I know. I've seen
it's
it.
It's so good.
I've seen it.
Oh yeah, and all the transitions are still great. I don't know. It could be one of those things where I'm just so nostalgically in love with it. But it is. It's my favorite werewolf movie. The Shining is one of my favorite Stephen King books, and this is one too where the performances and the character development is just incredible. It's horror. It's a different kind of horror. And it's perfection. No notes. Number three, Green Mile. And like I said, my first viewing of it was right after rewatching Shawshank, or I watched Shawshank right after I watched it, one or the other, but it was like a day of just emotional torture. It's such a beautiful story. It's well worth the entire long length of it to watch. Rob and I were talking before the show about how some movies can be a bit lengthy and they feel long. This is one that needs to be as long as it is.
Yes.
Number two, Misery. I love Misery. I love Mystery. Annie Wilkes is one of my favorite villains ever. I've done Annie Wilkes in adaptations over the years, my Annie Wilkes impression. It's not very good, but I love it. It's enthusiastic. And number one is Shawshank. It's the best. As we've already gotten into today, and we will in the subsequent scenes we're going to dive into throughout the week, it's perfection. It's from start to finish. One of the things I think Stephen King does the best. I don't always like his genre. It's not my favorite, but I continually read Stephen King books because he understands people. His characters talk to each other like real people. He gets people. So I don't care what the genre is when it comes to Stephen King. I am so interested in his characters and in the manner in which he tells stories that I'm there. And he's had so many adaptations, and yes, some of them have been really, really tragic and bad, but I think they've been overwhelmingly in the positive considering how crazy some of them are and just wild. They feel unadaptable. But yeah, Shawshank's the number
And
one.
many of them, they still find a way to adapt them. Yeah, so.
Yes. Yeah, they do. Some shouldn't, but
True.
some are great. Like I even like some of the bad ones, like Langoliers. I love
I
Langoliers.
like
It's not
the
great.
book much better because the special effects are crap in the Langoliers. Even though I'm a big Dean
That's
Falco fan.
why.
Right.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And it does. And it doesn't. And it's aged even worse. So.
Probably.
But I still love it.
It's been like
It's
it's
fun.
probably been like 10 years since
Yeah.
I saw that. So there's another one you're gonna get me after rewatch.
You don't have to rewatch that one, but it still is fun to
No,
me.
but
I think I made Mike watch it like 7 or 8 years ago, and he liked it despite the bad special effects.
okay. Again, I loved the book. I thought it was great. Why not? Why not try to seek it out again? Okay, so now we will play the first of two games that we are going to play with Heather today. The first one is called Name That Novel Adaptation. Okay, so the idea is that there are many novels that have been adapted into movies, and they change the name of the novel when in the movie. For instance, here this movie is originally called the book, the novella that this is based on is Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption, and the movie is just called. Oh, sorry, it's Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption. There is no the, as I learned weeks and weeks ago, that it's not a typo. It really does not have the extra the in the title, and the movie is just known as the Shawshank Redemption. So I made a list of movies that are based on books and. I'm going to randomly give you one of these every day, and I'm going to tell you the year and the original title of the book, and you have to try and guess what movie it is.
All right, the year of the
The year
movie
of the movie, the year
or
of
the
the movie,
book?
the year of the movie. All
Okay.
right, so let's spin the wheel and see what you're going to get today.
Hopefully, I don't embarrass myself too much. Or I will. It'll be great for listeners to scream out the right answers when I can't think of them. I know when I do that, I feel so smart. So
All right. So
it's harder when you're on the spot, though.
that's right.
It is.
So the first one that you're going to get is a movie that came out in 2009, and the original title is Push.
There was like a couple of these movies out at this time too. I can't think of the darn name. I know what movie it is though. There was like Hayden Christensen had done Jumper, and I feel like Fast and the Furious 2 guy was in this. Or no, maybe I'm thinking of Chris Evans. Is Chris Evans in it?
No.
It's a blonde, generic white guy. I know
No,
it.
not
At
at
least I
all.
think. Or maybe I'm on the.
This is not even anywhere close to that. You are really far away.
Okay, then I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Okay, so
I'm really far away. All
this
right.
movie was directed by Lee Daniels.
What am I thinking of? Now I can't get off this stupid jumper train of thought. Do you know what I'm thinking of though, that I'm wrong
I have
about?
absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay,
I'm gonna be mad because I know somewhere.
stars Monique, who won an Oscar for her role here, and Gabori Sidibe.
Oh, Precious!
There you go. Very good.
Precious. Yes! Yeah. What the frig was I thinking?
I do not know.
It's not even in the same universe.
I do not know. I can't give you the answer.
Maybe there is a movie called Push, or something like it. It was for people had superpowers. Okay, is that maybe where I'm going?
There is a movie named Push that came out in 2009, starring Chris Evans. So you were right. It's two young Americans with special abilities must race to find a girl in Hong Kong before a shadowy government organization called The Vision does.
Okay. My brain was at least connecting some dots. I wasn't just completely in left field.
I've actually never even seen that movie. Dude, this is bad.
I don't remember liking it too much.
That's okay. I watch bad movies.
I know you watch everything. I love that about you.
And I give you homework and you don't watch them. So, you know.
I don't watch much anymore. It's crazy.
Have you seen the documentary about Black Hawk Down yet? No.
Black Hawk Down? No.
I told you that a year and a half ago. And you still watch
it. I haven't forgotten about it. I've told you how I am with this. My brother, after 12 years, finally just returned Robert Ludlum's The Bourne Identity to me. He's on the second book right now. You're so bad. We do get to things, though. I actually asked him about it. He was over here a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about it, Rob. I asked him if he hadn't seen it, and he hadn't. So we talked about maybe watching it together. I don't know how that'll happen.
Yeah, exactly.
If not, we'll watch it separately and we'll talk about it. All right. It'll happen.
I'm sure it will. I trust you. I trust you. All right, and now we'll play the second game, which is called High-Low. And the idea here is I made a list of all Oscar Best Picture Oscar nominees from 1950 until now. All right. And you have to try and guess the IMDb score and the Rotten Tomatoes score. And just to give you a baseline. Okay. So Shawshank is a 9.3 on IMDb and 91% Rotten Tomatoes. Again, I've said this many times. I'm very curious how there are 9% of people out there that did not like Shawshank. You know, so can't explain.
I agree.
I can't explain it, but it's the way it is.
No, objectively, it's a perfect film. It just is.
Yeah.
You don't have to love it to not appreciate that it's a good movie.
Correct. Yeah. No. I don't have an answer. All right, so we will now, you're going to get three of these today. All right, so I'm going to spin the wheel and we'll see what you get.
Okay.
Okay, you get the 1962 Oscar winner, Lawrence of Arabia.
So I have to guess the IMDb score, and then I have to guess the Rotten Tomatoes.
That's correct.
Okay. I am going to say the IMDb is 8.9, and Rotten Tomatoes, I'm going to say, is 8.2.
No, it's a percentage.
Oh, percentage. 82%.
Okay. So you overshot the IMDb and undershot the Rotten Tomatoes. It's an 8.3. on IMDb and 93% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow. I would thought the one was more generous than the other. That's surprising.
That's right.
Interesting.
All right. Let's spin the wheel for your next one.
These are fun.
All right, the 2011 film Hugo.
Oh, I watched that once. I remember enjoying it. I feel like there was daddy issues, big time daddy issues. Maybe I'm wrong. Okay, I am going to say the IMDb was 7.4. And I'm going to say Rotten Tomatoes was, I'm going to put it in the 76%.
Well, you were very close on IMDb.
Fresh.
IMDb is 7.5. So you get it
Woohoo!
exactly, but Rotten Tomatoes is 93.
Wow.
I guess everyone
Dang.
liked seeing a Martin
I
Scorsese
missed the
film.
boat on
Yeah,
that
I guess
one.
everyone liked seeing a Martin Scorsese film that was not about gangsters, you know, and see that he actually can make something else.
He can. I just prefer his gangster
Right.
films. That's all. I don't, I like I said, I barely even remember it. It didn't impact me. So,
Okay.
okay. I remember being good.
Yes. All right. So now let's spin the wheel for your third one today. All right, the 1983 film Tender Mercies, the one that the late great Robert Duvall won an Oscar for.
Oh. All right. IMDb, I'm gonna say 8.1. And Rotten Fruit, the greatest band in the world. Rotten Tomatoes, I'm going to say 72% fresh.
Okay, you are way off on both of those.
I just feel like people don't always appreciate. Yeah, I feel like people don't. I've never seen it, so I'm just guessing. I also feel like typically too with Rotten Tomatoes, they're not always big fans of critically acclaimed flicks. So that was
No, but
just a
again,
shot in the dark.
this is critics.
And
This
apparently
is
I blew
critics.
it.
This is not fans. So that's the thing. Maybe I didn't make that clear.
Yeah, I know some Rotten Tomatoes
Oh,
people
okay.
though.
All right, so it's a
No.
7.4.
I know some people,
So it's an
yeah.
IMDb 7.4, and it's 92%
Okay.
on Rotten Tomatoes. So,
I'm getting it
okay, well
totally wrong.
you got another 12 of
Ah!
these for the rest of the week, so you'll be fine.
It's fun. It's fun. I don't care if I do
Okay,
bad. This is
that's
fun.
good. I'm glad. I want you to do well, but if you don't care, then that's fine too.
I do too. I'm going to make the best guess I can with the
That's the
information
way
I
you should do it.
have.
That's right.
No need to get mad about
All
it.
right, excellent. So, Heather,
Yeah.
would you like to tell everyone where they can find Heather Baxendale?
Yes, you can find all of my goodies at heatherbaxendale.com. You can find my books there. My first trilogy, The Prophecy, is available to purchase. You can also find my podcast there, Word of Hellmouth, where my good friend Mark and I are on season four of Buffy and season one of Angel, doing an episode by episode breakdown of the show with grown up eyes. And you can find all of my social media stuff on there and tons of other fun stuff, other shows that I go on and that kind of thing too.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So until tomorrow, get busy living.
Get busy dying.